Hello and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast. My name is Eric Jensen and I'm joined today by good longtime friend of the show and returning guest, Yusei Koshal. How you doing, Yusei?
Good, how are you, man?
I'm doing good. I am getting settled into my new routine with the new semester and kind of getting more of a flow of things down. I'm excited for the Super Bowl coming up here in a week. It's kind of been about a week since I last did a podcast, and I'm excited to kind of get back on the horse and get ready to see what we got as far as some Super Bowl storylines, which I think we're going to talk about later today. How are you?
Good, you know, just trying to keep warm here in Chicago. Tomorrow, actually, it's supposed to be like negative 20 or something with like negative 30 wind chill. So it's going to be colder in Chicago on Wednesday and Thursday than it is in Antarctica, Siberia, and Mount Everest. So yeah, it's out here taking on the winter elements.
Well, I hope you stay safe. I saw a bunch of news reports actually about that. I saw some place is supposed to be like negative 60 with wind chill. That looks unpleasant. So hopefully, you know, you stay warm and you stay cozy out there in Chicago. All right, let's get to it. Starting out, a little bit of news. Alex Smith is... the Redskins are planning on him being out for the entire 2019 season. This is big news, of course, for the Redskins, who signed Smith to that long-term deal. Well, it was a short-term deal. They could technically cut him this offseason, but I'm not sure they want to do that. What do you think the Redskins are doing at quarterback moving forward?
Well, I really think, you know, obviously everyone wants to say, well, draft Dwayne Haskins or Kyler Murray, which at this point, I think a pretty good option on the table if they're looking to find someone long-term. But I really think what the Redskins do is this, because we know their quarterback room's depleted. Mark Sanchez, he's a good, you know, scout team guy, excellent guy who can coach a young guy up, but he's not your long-term solution, nor is Josh Johnson, you know. Colt McCoy, nothing special either. And I really think that what the Redskins will do here is sort of dip into the free agent pool and try their hand at one of the quarterbacks this offseason, one of the veteran free agent quarterbacks, and maybe draft a guy in the second or third round to hopefully groom as the long-term replacement.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think they'll have to aim at the free agency market just because I think they're too low to draft a guy. Their draft position, they won a few games at the end of the year, which kind of ended up hurting their draft position. I believe they pick, 14th or 15th, correct?
Yeah, I have not had a chance to extensively look into the NFL draft yet, but I do know they're like right there on the border between like 10 and 17, I think, so in that range.
Yeah, I think that probably Dwayne Haskins and or Kyler Murray may be gone by the time that the Redskins get on the clock. So I think that they go for a free agent quarterback as well. It's also a great way to kind of come into this discussion. I want to very quickly get each of us give our top five available quarterbacks this offseason, either through free agency and the draft combined. So I'll start. My number one is Nick Foles. I think he's the most polished guy out of everyone on the free agent list. I know that some people say he's streaky, but every time that he knows that he is the for sure starter and that he knows his job is safe, he plays really good football, and I think if you put him in the role as a starter, he could be a guy that takes your team to the playoffs. Two, I would have Teddy Bridgewater. I think his showing in Week 17 didn't help him too much, but I still think he has a ton of promise as a young passer. And then I would say My third one would be Tyrod Taylor. He's been out of the news cycle since about week three of this year, but he's a good, solid option, doesn't turn over the ball, and if you're really looking for a quarterback that isn't going to hurt your team, that can guide a great defense to the playoffs, then Tyrod Taylor's your guy to go grab. I would say I have not studied these college quarterbacks extensively, but from what I've heard, Dwayne Haskins is the number one guy, so I'd have him at four, and I'd have Kyler Murray at number five. What about you?
So, yeah, you know, my list is looking a little similar to yours, but I actually have Teddy Bridgewater at number one, and the reason for that is because, you know, I think he's like 26 or 27 years old, so fairly young guy. I think that, you know, for Bridgewater, the problem – you know, in 2017, 2018, wasn't his knee. I mean, he healed from the knee, thought he responded from that very well. I just think he hasn't had a bunch of opportunities. There's been a lack of opportunities for Bridgewater to really showcase and, you know, show teams, hey, listen, you know, I can still play the game at a high level. I'm still a starting caliber quarterback. So that's my number one guy. My number two guy is Nick Foles. I mean, Foles, he's an excellent player, but there is just one thing I worry about him is, you know, I remember Doug Peterson saying back when Foles took the starting job, when Carson Wentz went down with that ACL injury in during the 2017 season, he's like, hey, listen, we had to tinker our scheme just a bit to fit what Nick Foles was looking for. And if you remember watching that Atlanta Falcons, Philadelphia Eagles game, Foles looked just really off in the first half. He was missing throws. They made adjustments in the second half, and then he heated up. And that's what worries me about Foles is if he ends up in a place where, you know, they don't cater the scheme to his needs, I think that's really going to be a problem. I seriously believe that out of all the quarterbacks that are going to be in the free agent pool this year, that Foles is in one way the biggest boom or bust prospect. And then, you know, I think that, number three, number four, I've got Dwayne Haskins and Kyler Murray. Because the thing is, this team's in the NFL, they're not going to pay a veteran quarterback like $20 or $30 million a year to, be their franchise quarterback. They're going to pay the veteran short-term money, and then the rookie, they're going to find someone in the, you know, NFL draft like a Dwayne Haskins or Kyler Murray or Drew Lock that are eventually going to be those long-term starters. And then the fifth guy that I think, as I look at the free agent quarterbacks here on SpotTrack.com, that I think could still be somewhat of a solid quarterback in this league is RG3. I know he's been injured. I know he's been banged up these last few years, but, you know, RG3's worked super hard to get a NFL opportunity, and he's gotten on rosters. He just hasn't, you know, made it to the top. And if he does get a chance with, you know, as a veteran quarterback and a rookie quarterback somewhere, some teams give him a chance, I think that RG3 could potentially be a starter. Because as you look at some of the other quarterbacks on this list, like Josh McCown, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Geno Smith, Brock Osweiler, there's not really any like capable starting free agent quarterbacks this offseason.
I worry about Griffin, though, because he takes so many unnecessary hits and still somehow hasn't learned how to slide as a quarterback. And every single time that he gets contacted, it looks like a car wreck, and he's so injury prone. He showed some good things in the preseason, and when he had to come in for the Ravens this year, the few plays that he did when Lamar Jackson was briefly hurt for a stint, but I'm just not sure I would trust him at all as a starting caliber NFL quarterback.
I mean, you know, I think the deal with, signing a veteran free agent quarterback is that these teams, you know, they know and realize, I think the reason these teams are willing to take a risk on some of these veteran free agent guys is because they know, well, this guy's only going to be in for whatever, let's just say like 5 or 6 games max. You know, if a team can keep RG3 up right and healthy for 5 or 6 games until they feel like their rookie quarterback's ready, I think it works out great. And, you know, like I said, a lot of these quarterbacks, they're going to earn those, you know, you're going to see these guys sign, I think, 2 or 3 year deals, but it's really going to be like a 1 year and we'll see what's up deal.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that quarterbacks have a little bit more leverage than that. I think that they're gonna go after big long-term deals if you're a quarterback, and I think that they have the kind of leverage to make NFL teams give them those long-term contracts. The one thing that I just found really interesting about your comments, especially on Teddy Bridgewater, the one thing I do worry about with Bridgewater is the injuries, because an ACL is not an insignificant injury, and he had one of the worst knee injuries of all time, according to the doctors and sources of that nature around the league. I just don't know how sturdy that knee is going to be when he comes back. And I think that has to be a major concern for NFL teams.
Right, I mean, I think that Bridgewater's knee is gonna play into who gives him, which team gives him what type of money. It's without a doubt. I believe right now that the Bridgewater's knee is actually the biggest obstacle that's gonna prevent him from landing a long-term deal or even cashing in, and getting more than I think what he anticipates he's probably gonna end up getting. And it's an unfortunate switch situation nonetheless, because just a couple years ago he looked like he was really on the rise and was one of gonna be one of the better young quarterbacks in the league. And I think that had his knee injury not happened, we honestly would not have seen the Vikings go after Kirk Cousins last offseason. But I think that really for Bridgewater, like I said, if a team can keep him upright for a couple games, and I believe that teams will bring in doctors and whatnot just to help Bridgewater and make sure, well, listen, are you on pace with your knee? Is it sore? How are you feeling today? Do you want to practice? Things like that. So I think teams are going to monitor his knee extensively, whoever ends up signing him. But it's just a matter of how healthy he is and how ready he is.
Strangely, after talking about all of this, I honestly think Nick Foles is the safest bet at NFL free agent as far as quarterback goes. He doesn't have a ton of injury concerns. You know what he's going to give you most of the time, and that is a decent starting quarterback who's not going to make a ton of mistakes and who's going to be able to get the ball out quickly. I know that scheme might be an issue, but I think that Nick Foles is a smart enough guy that he can learn a new scheme. I think that his game is based on quick throws. I think if you let him throw the ball quickly, if you scheme to his strengths, which I think a team will do, I think teams will adapt their schemes to fit Nick Foles. I think he will be a very successful starting quarterback in this league, and I just think that he has the least amount of questions around him. Now, my question to you is this: you have two rookies pretty high at 3 and 4. I've heard nothing from like the draft analyst or whatever, except that this quarterback class is terrible. Why are those two quarterbacks so high for you?
Well, I really cite the drafts of 2016, 2017, and 2018, so the last three, as reasons that these rookie quarterbacks that I rank Haskins and Murray so high. Look, it's difficult for me to find an NFL comparison to Dwayne Haskins, or I'm sorry, for Kyler Murray, but Dwayne Haskins, I've heard some people say, well, he's, kid's a 1 year starter at OSU, but he does remind some people of Jared Goff. And going back to what I just said about the drafts, the reality is this is teams will overdraft some of these quarterbacks all the time. It happened in 2016, it really happened in 2017, and then 2018 was the year where we saw 14 five quarterbacks were selected in the first round, four of which teams traded up for. And it's just the way that the NFL is trending now with these rookie quarterbacks in the draft is that if you're just going to sit there and hope that a guy like I'm sorry, a guy like Haskins or Murray or even Drew Lock slides to you, you're really betting against yourself. If you don't go up and you don't get, you don't trade up, make that necessary move, give up the draft capital to get that, you know, a quarterback from whatever school, then you're going to end up losing out. Because if you seriously believe that a player and a quarterback, especially a quarterback, if you believe that that guy's your guy and he's going to be the one to come in and turn your franchise around, then you should be willing to take the risk to move up and get him. And I think that that's what we're going to see on draft night, where I feel like you are going to see a fourth straight year of a team trading up to draft a quarterback or two.
Yeah, I think that, yes, you're right. Teams always overdraft these quarterbacks. I just don't, personally, I don't think any one of these teams should draft one of these guys in the top 10. I know they will, but I just don't think, I think there's so many better defensive players in this draft that you could go after. And I just think that quarterback is not something you want to go at in the top 10. All right, that was some good quarterback talk, but now it's time to talk a little bit about the big game, Super Bowl Sunday. And I want to talk, you said, about some Super Bowl storylines. Now, unfortunately, I don't know if you saw any of media night last night, but I saw a little bit of it. Nothing super juicy came out of there. You know, the Patriots are very buttoned down as an organization. The Rams look to kind of be the same way. I wouldn't say there are a ton of eye-popping stories at first glance for this Super Bowl that haven't already been mentioned. So, I was thinking we would just kind of make up our own Super Bowl storylines here. And the first one I have, and I want to ask you this, is Jared Goff ready for the big game? Because you look at his entire career at Cal, he never really played in a big game. In the NFL, he's only really played in about four big games, and he hasn't performed overly exceptionally in two of them. He was kind of bad in the Falcons playoff game last year, and he wasn't great in the Cowboys playoff game this year. And he's playing probably the most experienced quarterback in championship games of all time in Tom Brady. Is Jared Goff ready for this moment?
Well, I also just, you mentioned Goff being bad in a couple playoff games. And I think that, before I answer your question, if he's ready, I also want to comment and say that I was not impressed with Jared Goff in the first half of the NFC Championship game against the Saints. I mean, he looked off, honestly. And now to get to the question, is Jared Goff ready? I believe he's not 100% ready. He's 50% there, because I seriously think that when you look at this Rams offense and you look at the guys that they've surrounded Jared Goff with, they have Brandon Cooks, they've got Robert Woods, Josh Reynolds, as their, big three wide receivers, really. But I think really the significance is in the running back position in Todd Gurley, who I think is the best in the NFL right now. And I feel like, whenever Goff starts playing bad, then teams will just be like, or the Rams, what they'll end up doing is, Todd Gurley's automatically going to take over the game. I don't think Jared Goff is honestly ready for this moment. And you also look at the defense that he has of Ndamukong Suh, Aaron Donald. We know the big names on the Rams defense, and I feel like in certain cases, they have bailed Jared Goff out a lot more than he has bailed the Rams out.
You mentioned Todd Gurley, and here's the problem with believing in Todd Gurley. Todd Gurley, in my opinion, has not been the same running back since week 12. He has not looked good at running back since week 12. That's truly what I believe. And in the playoffs, he's looked really bad. So I don't know if they can trust Todd Gurley to come in and be a huge part of the game. As much as they're probably planning on it, I kind of have a hard time believing it until I see it, just because he's been so I'm looking for the right word. He has been so underwhelming the past two playoff games. He wasn't that big a factor in the Cowboys game, and he wasn't that big a factor in the Saints game. And I'm gonna contradict my own storyline here a little bit. I thought Jared Goff played his best football I've ever seen in the second half of that Saints game. Every time he needed to make a throw, he made a throw. I think he's a little bit closer to ready than we think, but I would still say that no, I don't know if he's ready for this moment yet just because of how big it's going to be. I don't think any young quarterback is truly ready for the Super Bowl until they've played in it. I mean, you look at, there are maybe one or two exceptions. You look at Russell Wilson, who came in his second year in the league and had a great Super Bowl against the Denver Broncos. But still, quarterbacks, I don't know. Sometimes I think you've got to run towards, pardon me as I stumble over my words, but I don't know if Jared Goff is ready for the big moment yet.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the good thing about this Rams team is that, you know, they are young. They've got, you know, I mean, they've got a lot of their core guys locked up. Brandon Cooks, Todd Gurley, Aaron Donald, just to name, you know, a few. And then Goff's obviously going to be eligible for an extension, I think, this offseason or next offseason. I'll have to double check on that. But they've got most of their guys locked up. So if they lose this Super Bowl, they still have, you know, the chance to get back to the, you know, their next another Super Bowl in the future.
Absolutely. All right. A question to start our next storyline. Is this Tom Brady's last Super Bowl?
Honestly, no. I mean, I know he said a couple days ago, I think it was on ESPN interview, because I just saw the headline where Brady's like, listen, I've set goals for myself in life. Every year does get harder and harder. I'm 41 years old right now, but my goal is to play till 45. And, you know, I think, you know, some of the things that Brady said after the AFC Championship game where he's like, yeah, you know, I know people are saying that, you know, the Patriots look like we're done, we're too old, we just don't have what it takes to get back to the Super Bowl. Brady proved everyone wrong, and I think that he's going to prove everyone wrong this Sunday, and I think that he is going to prove people wrong again next season when he sticks around for his 19th season. I don't think Brady's done. You know, just looking at the way that he takes care of his body, I feel like he has three really good years left in him, and I expect the Patriots to make another Super Bowl run maybe in 2020. But I don't think he's done as of right now, and I don't think this is certainly going to be his last Super Bowl.
I honestly do think this is his last Super Bowl, and I think he retires. I know he has said no, but just the way he answered questions after the AFC Championship game, I just have this sneaking suspicion that he is going to, if the Patriots win Sunday, he will walk away into the sunset. I truly believe that's what's going to happen. I don't think that he's going to stick around for much longer than he's currently is right now, just because I don't know if he can last another year and play this well. And I know that they certainly proved everyone wrong this year, and good on the Patriots, but I don't think that next year he can make it to a Super Bowl. I just don't think he can. And I think that we saw a gradual decline from him this year. I think if he plays again next year, he's going to really fall off a little bit. I am just worried about his long-term quality as a quarterback, I guess. That would be my take on this storyline, at least. I don't think he's going to come back. Anyways, next storyline. If Aaron Donald has a big game in the Super Bowl, I think he's punched his ticket to the Hall of Fame. What do you think?
I think absolutely, yes, he has. I mean, you know, you look at Aaron Donald, and in my opinion, you know, he is, I think, the best defensive tackle of this generation. You know, the guy's a game wrecker. I feel like Donald in the second half of that Rams-Saints championship game was the one who made some plays to single-handedly get the Rams back into that game. I mean, I know it was the third or fourth quarter, and he had a fumble where the Saints were in their own territory, and what happened is Donald just, Donald absolutely manhandled one of the running backs, and then bam, that set the Rams up in good field position, and they were able to go on and score. Donald's a phenomenal player, and I think that if he shows up on Sunday, right, and has the game of his life, and the Rams win, I think that Donald is in fact gonna go to Canton, Ohio. And even if the Rams don't win, I seriously think Donald's just that good. He's one of the best players of this generation, and I feel like, yeah, he will be in Canton someday.
Yeah, I think he's gonna have a big Super Bowl, win or lose, for the Rams. I think that he can beat the interior of the Patriots offensive line easily. And I'm excited to see what his stat line kind of ends up being on Sunday, which brings me to my next thing. I want to draw comparisons between the Broncos' defense of 2015 in the Super Bowl and the Rams. Okay, both were coached by Wade Phillips. That's the number one thing that stands out, obviously. Both had great pass rushes. Dante Fowler is finding his step off the edge. He has looked great the last 2 weeks as far as pass rush goes. Both had insanely good interior defensive lines. The Rams are probably the best interior defensive line in the entire NFL. And I would say the one difference would be, I think the Broncos' secondary was a lot better. Better than the Rams' secondary is, but the Rams still have a great cornerback who was on that defense in Aqib Talib, who played absolutely wonderfully against the Saints, and they really did take away everyone in that Saints game except for Alvin Kamara, basically. Their middle linebacker is where this team is weak, but I just see a lot of parallels between this Rams defense and the Broncos defense that single-handedly won the Super Bowl. I don't know. Am I crazy in seeing that, or is that just my Broncos fan brain going off?
I'm not sure, actually. I mean, I think you look back and then you see the two defenses, and, the Rams, obviously both carried their teams to the Super Bowl, in my opinion. The Rams, I understand they had help from their offense, but the Broncos also had a veteran quarterback in Peyton Manning and a great play caller in Gary Kubiak. I think there's tons of similarities between the two teams. But, since considering the question's all about defense, I think you look at the front sevens of both teams, I would honestly give the upper hand to the Broncos. The defensive line of both teams. I'd give the upper hand to the 2015 Broncos specifically because I know they had guys like Derek Wolf, Malik Jackson, pretty dominant guys. I think you look at the Rams, and prior to the offseason that they had, they had a good front seven, but I don't think it was on the level of the 2015 Broncos, because prior to getting Ndamukong Suh and trading for Dante Fowler and having they had, only, I think, Aaron Donald as that one really premier pass rusher there. And then you look at the linebacking core for both teams. I'd give the upper hand to Denver, honestly, because I remember that, if I remember correctly, that I believe it was a 4-3 defense or a 3-4. I know you're a Broncos guy, so you're going to have knowledge of that Wade Phillips scheme. But, I think that Broncos linebacking core was on another level compared to this Rams one. I mean, they had Von Miller, Brandon Marshall, Danny Trevathan even, And I feel like Trevathan being the middle linebacker for that defense, he was one of the more underrated parts of that defense. I mean, Trevathan's a guy, he's on my team now, the Bears, and he still doesn't get enough credit for what he does because everyone's always focused on, like, Khalil Mack. And then, the secondary, I'd give the upper hand to the LA Rams, actually. Aqib Talib, Marcus Peters, LaMarcus Joyner. These are three guys that I think have been playing phenomenal lights out, and they always seem to make plays. They figured out a way to shut down Michael Thomas in their second meeting, whereas in the first meeting in the regular season in Louisiana, Michael Thomas honestly was all over the place.
Absolutely. You said, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
All right, you just kind of cut off abruptly. That's okay. All right, let's finish off with some hot takes. You brought this up, so I'll let you start. Let's do two hot takes each. I'll let you give yours first.
All right, number one. And so, a little bit of a story about how I came up with this hot take. So, one of the websites I write for, Snacktime Fantasy, every year we do a staff Super Bowl predictions. I'm the guy who's the driving force behind this, right? So look for that to be published over the coming days. But I asked all the writers, I'm like, let's provide a hot take for each team. I typed this out last night at 11:30 p.m., and I'm going to say it again, not even 24 hours later. I seriously believe my hot take is that Todd Gurley will be a total non-factor in this Super Bowl. And I know some people are going to look at me crazy and be like, well, hold on, you just called Todd Gurley the best running back in the NFL earlier on this podcast. Yeah, I know I did. I acknowledge that. But if it's one thing we know about the New England Patriots, the Patriots basically feed off of taking away your best thing. I feel like they're going to come in, and first off, they're going to pressure Jared Goff, right? But number two, they are going to go bam, 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 and just shut down Todd Gurley, because Todd Gurley is the best thing on the Rams offense. And if you take away Todd Gurley, then you know what? You seem to basically shut down the explosive Rams offense.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's that much of a hot take, to be honest with you, because I agree. I think the Patriots are going to be able to find a way to take Todd Gurley out of the game. And I think, honestly, Todd Gurley's kind of gimped right now. I don't know if he is even playing at 100%. That's my big thing with Todd Gurley. My first hot take is that Michael Brockers, even if the Rams don't win, Michael Brockers is going to be a household name by the end of the Super Bowl. People don't realize how good this guy is. He has been a monster all year. He's put up good numbers. He's been graded really well by PFF. He's put up really good tape. I love what Michael Brockers has done this year, and I think he can absolutely expose these Patriots tackles. I think that Brockers is definitely a guy to watch come Sunday, and I think he's going to come up with a massive stat line, have probably 7 to 8 tackles and a sack. I think he is going to have an excellent game against the Patriots. I think Brockers is a guy to watch this Super Bowl.
Right, Brockers is one of the more underrated defensive linemen in the game. And I feel like, I know I said this with Danny Trevathan earlier. I feel like the reason we don't talk about Michael Brockers enough is because he's also a guy that's basically in the shadow of another dominant defensive player, Aaron Donald. I feel like if Aaron Donald wasn't there, we would see, people talk about Michael Brockers as being that dominant defensive lineman on the Rams defensive line.
So, what's your second hot take?
All right, second hot take. I'm gonna go ahead and say that the Patriots absolutely forced Jared Goff into having one of the worst games of his career, because to me, Jared Goff is the key to the Rams offense performing so successfully, or one of the many keys, I think, but he's definitely up there. And I think that you look at past teams, like if you look at that week, I think it was a week 14 Sunday night game here in Chicago, where the Bears showed perfectly, listen, this is how you beat the Rams. You just get to Jared Goff. And I think Goff tossed four, yeah, he tossed four interceptions in that game. And the Bears didn't even knock Goff down much. They basically just consistently pressured him. And I feel like that's what's going to happen on Sunday, where we look at the Patriots pass rush and we're like, okay, there's not really like, there's no guy that's really big household name, but they will figure out a way to absolutely shut down Goff.
I think that's a really interesting prediction, and I'm gonna save my final hot take for Thursday's show because I gotta talk about this all again, and I don't want to give away too much of what I'm gonna say about the game on Sunday. But it sounds like you have the Patriots winning this in kind of blowout fashion. So I you won't be back until the off season. On this podcast, we have Pierce lined up, and Ian Kusick lined up for Thursday's podcast, guys. So please make sure to check that out. That'll be up Thursday. But who do you think's gonna win this game, and why?
Yeah, I think the Patriots are. You know, here's the thing. You mentioned me taking the me sound like I think the Patriots are gonna win. Do I think the Rams can win? Yes, but they're gonna have to do a hell of a lot of things, right? Like force Tom Brady into making mistakes, which we know Brady doesn't make mistakes. We know he's surrounded, but oh, can you hear me now? Yeah, hello. I'm still on, dude. Can you hear me? But, yeah, all right, so we are back now, folks. Sorry about that. But, yeah, listen, here's the deal. I think the Rams can win, absolutely. I feel like the Rams, they do have every bit of a chance. You know, you don't know what's going to happen in the Super Bowl. But the biggest reason I'm taking the Patriots is this, is because it's very difficult for, and it, I don't know if it's just me, but it's very difficult for me to go against the, you know, experience of the Patriots. I mean, you saw last year how the Eagles came in. And they basically scored on nearly every play. And then what happened is the Patriots defense was getting beat by a whole bunch of trick plays. Some of the Patriots' own trick plays in the Super Bowl didn't work. But I think that Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, they're going to learn from that. And they're going to figure out and devise a game plan to beat what is a less experienced Rams team. Because the Rams, they haven't been to the Super Bowl since, I think, 2001, right? And this is a really young core that's gonna, I think that if the Rams live up to the moment, I think they're gonna win. If not, then I think we see the Patriots win. But it's very difficult for me, as I just said, to bet against the experience of the Patriots.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, man. Well, thank you very much for joining us, and we will see you again in the offseason.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on, and I hope everyone enjoys the game on Sunday.
Absolutely. All right. We will be back on Thursday, folks. Give us a follow on Twitter at EndZonePod. Go follow, you say it on Twitter, at UKoschelSports, correct?
It's actually at Usaid Koschel.
At Usaid Koschel. I always get that mixed up. But go follow Usaid. Go follow the podcast. Follow me on Twitter if you haven't already. Eric18Utah would always love to see new people following me. Anyways, thank you very much for listening to the podcast. We will be back Thursday. All right. See you guys then. Peace out.